final hour of Overdrive on TSN 1050. Now up on TSN 2, Andy Petrillo filling in for Brian Hayes. Frankie Corrado in for Jeff O'Neill and Jamie Noodles McLennan holding down the fort here. About 5 minutes, Darren Pang's going to join us. We'll talk about the St. Louis Blues-Colorado Avalanche series that could close out tonight if the Avs could pull off a win. They still have the 3-2 victory. And yesterday and even today we were talking Nathan MacKinnon, guys. So, you know, you pull up his stats and what he's done in the playoffs. It's actually stupid. He's always had more points than games played. I think there was one year where he had 6 points in six games. But, you know, the couple years ago, the 25 points, you know, his 9 goals in 15 games. He shows up all the time. And that's been since 2013-14. Lost in the first round. Went 3 years not making the playoffs. Colorado did not. And then it was first round exit, and the last couple years have been second round exits.
Well,
it's
you know,
is this OV all over again?
It's not, but I always have things that I kind of park in my mind when I think of certain teams. And I think the one thing that stood out for me at a year-end presser for last season was Nathan MacKinnon's comments.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everyone can win a press conference. We're learning lessons. We're doing, you know, everyone's got the cliches.
Yeah.
Nathan MacKinnon was pissed. And he said, I've been in this league 9 years and I've accomplished nothing. And it stood out for me because he was saying, like, I can be one of the best players on the planet. I've got nothing to show for it as far as, you know, team success. And, you know, I banked that. I was like, this guy is going to be an animal this year. And he certainly was. Now, they weren't without adversity. He was injured. That's why Nazem Kadri was getting first power play minutes and was able to get a lot of production. You know, they had the COVID, just like everyone. Yeah. But it was, you know, they had a lot of adversity this season.
He had, and he had some other quotes, Jamie, that I thought were pretty interesting about the fitness testing at training camp. I don't know if you remember that. He's like, it was something along the lines of, yeah, I win every test in training camp anyways. Like, okay, yeah, you're the star player of the team, right? But, like, I don't know, like, do you remember your days? Like, sometimes the best players weren't necessarily the best guys at the fitness testing and the training camp. It was, like, the meaty kind of bigger galoot guys, I guess. And, like, this guy's like, not only am I the star player, I'm the best player, I'm also going to dust you all on the bike, the bench press, the squat, and, like, you know, I'm just going to lead the way in every single aspect. He's a beast. It's like he's, when he winds it up and he's picking up speed, it's like he's frothing at the mouth to just expose someone and score a goal, which he did to Nick Leddy the other night on that fourth goal.
I agree. I've played with both ends of the spectrum, though. So Jarome Iginla used to win the fitness test. Like he was that, you know, that disciplined of an athlete, that, you know, unbelievable at everything. Jarome's just a natural talent, but he works really hard at it. Like he's the whole package.
Yeah.
And then my goalie partner, Mika Kiprusoff, Mika would spend, I'm not lying, what made Mika one of the best athletes I've ever seen, he thought the game better than I've ever played with. Like, he processed the game. He could tell you exactly how things unfolded. So he thought the game very well, and he worked at what he needed to do. Like, he stretched 3 hours a day. I'm not lying. This guy literally would sit in the splits for hours.
I've seen goalies do that. Like, you just walk into the gym, and there they are in the splits. You're like, that looks so painful.
He would have, in the Flames, you know, gym, there was like a spider web, and he would be hooked up in it. Like, he would be in the full splits, and he would sit there for, like, on game day,
I believe
over an hour.
I believe they call that a torture device.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I went over and trained with Mika in Finland for, you know, every summer for a week or 10 days here or there. Like, we'd watch a movie. For 2 hours, he'd sit on a mat and just watch the movie in the splits.
Yeah.
Like, he knew exactly what his body needed. And I'm not going to speak out of turn, but, you know, Mika, he didn't mind cigarettes once in a while. He didn't mind, you know, he didn't mind.
Listen, I worked a Flames game when I was in the hallway. I'm like, who's smoking right now?
Well, I mean,
well, you got to stay sane, right? Like, a lot of guys chew.
He had a chew always in between periods.
Yeah.
But the thing is My point is Mika knew exactly what it took for him to be ready. So it wasn't, hey, my VO2 is 72. Guess what Mika did in Calgary for seven straight years? He played 70-plus games. That is ridiculous on any
nuts.
Level.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter what his gym score was. He knew exactly what it took for him to be ready to play at a high level year in and year out. He's one of the most talented goaltenders I've ever seen. But he didn't have to be a hero in the gym. What he was a hero to get himself ready on that given night.
Yeah.
So, Noodles, you're a goalie, too. The two of you watched movies together. Did you, like, just both sit there in the splits?
No, I was sitting in a chair having a drink. I was on holidays. It was the middle of summer. He's training. I was like the goalie coach.
Do you think
every goalie
just watches a movie in the splits?
Well,
Andy?
I'm like,
wait.
I'm just like, Frankie, imagine if we walked in the room and these guys are just sitting there in the splits watching, like, I don't know, whatever movie. It's
well,
like,
that would be a goalie thing, right? Like, goalies are a little, you know, a little different, right?
keep in mind, go back on my game tape. You ever see me do the splits? I was a stand-up goaltender. I had probably the worst hip rotation. So that wasn't something that was in my repertoire. I mean, I could do the splits when you turned. I didn't have toe forward, both where you could actually touch.
Like, hey, when you're square to the puck, Jamie, you don't need the splits. You're just always hitting you in the chest. There you go.
Sitting in the splits, watching a Van Damme movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see if Panger would watch movies in the splits. Darren Pang, NHL and TNT analyst, former goalie. We're talking Mika Kiprusoff, Panger, just to give you a bit of context there. Noodles sharing some stories about how, you know, Kiprusoff would do what he needed to do to make sure that he was ready for games. And I guess part of that was all he did was really stretch for hours on end and then, would just sit there in the splits.
And the odd dart.
Wow.
Then I was going to say, then he had a smoke and a pancake. I love it. Great to be on the show. How's everybody doing tonight?
We are great. We're looking forward to the game tonight because, I don't know, are we going to get an answer of who's going to face the Edmonton Oilers, or are we going to have to wait another game? And just so you know, we've been grieving, the fact that Colorado lost because of the performance that Nathan MacKinnon gave. And it just, you know, from a purely hockey perspective, neutral fan, when you see a player put up a performance like that, you're like, man, and you don't even walk away with the win. What do you make of what MacKinnon has been doing?
Well, it's funny you say that. I brought my 2-year-old granddaughter. I needed to help out my daughter and her husband today, so I brought her to practice. And I was watching her draw on all my notes because I gave her a pen, and I'm thinking to myself, what I saw the other night was a Picasso. A brilliant performance, perfect from start to finish. And then once the Picasso was finished, it was like my granddaughter taking her crayon and scribbling all over it. That's what that felt like. I mean, it was a game for the ages. It was the electricity in the building, being between the benches was a spectacular experience for me. And I've seen a lot, but this was incredible. And then, you know, the time that they spent to clean up the hats, I think enabled the Blues to at least reset, get out a game plan, tell Billy Husso when he's going to come out. I think they used that brilliantly as a timeout and didn't waste that valuable time. So didn't mean they were automatically going to score, but for them to suck the life back out of that building after it was so energetic was something that you don't see very often.
Panger, you know both teams very well. Obviously, you cover St. Louis, so you know them inside and out. I was saying earlier in the show, this is so pivotal for Colorado tonight's game because I just think that the longer this series goes, the Blues know how to win. They're a battle-tested team, and as you see, I mean, you just laid out, they were able to be calm and regroup and find that goal at the end of the game and then take it in overtime. Do you see a confident St. Louis group that will use and draw on that experience as the series goes on?
I would agree with that. I mean, you know, we had two mantras going in the last game. St. Louis is saying, Noodles, hey, we're heading back to St. Louis. We might as well drag them with us. And
right.
then you probably heard that little clip of MacKinnon after he scored that goal saying, we're not getting on a plane and going back there. so, you know, I think the pressure's not on St. Louis. We all know that. The best team in the league or the second best team in the league, and I would argue that they were the best team in the league, was Colorado. And the pressure's on them because they haven't advanced to the conference final since 2002. It's a core group of players that haven't been able to get over the hump. So that's tough. That's mentally maybe draining. That's where you might give the Blues the edge to climb back to a game seven, is that they've got a little extra layer of skin around them because they have done well in elimination games. They have bounced back. They have been resilient. They proved that in 2019. They haven't done it in the playoffs since, but they are obviously doing it now because they do feel good about themselves. But listen, all that being said, Two Noodles, you can't have any passengers. I mean, the reason right. why, I mean, Colorado was dominated in this series, and the Blues didn't have enough guys on board. And now all of a sudden, Robert Thomas has got some confidence, and Tarasenko and Buchnevich, and, you know, so that makes a world of difference because you can't play against Colorado with, what, six guys, seven guys? It's impossible to play against that team with a limited amount of players.
Panger, you know, I'm always watching the game as a defenseman from a defenseman's point of view, and I love when I see a guy who's a little, not necessarily unheralded, but does a lot of subtle things really well throughout the course of the game. And for the St. Louis Blues, that's Colton Parayko. And, you know, every time I watch him, it's like there's little moments where he could make a certain decision that could either turn the tide their way, but if it doesn't go their way, it could kind of not go south, but, you know, it could go one way or the other. But he always makes the right decision, and he's very poised with the puck. Like, how important has he been for them, you know, as underdogs against Minnesota, underdogs against Colorado, and now you're seeing that they're giving Colorado a pretty good run for their money?
Yeah, he's a special human being, to be honest with you. He's the kind of guy you'd want to date your daughter, or for me, your granddaughter. You know what I mean? Like, he's a special guy. He's a very nice guy. He's even keeled. He doesn't get too high or too low. He doesn't get too intense, but maybe sometimes you'd like him a little bit more intense. But that's why he plays the game so well, is because he doesn't get wrapped up in the emotions of it. And you're right about his skating stride, the way that he pushed some pucks ahead to the right areas of the ice. And if he makes a mistake, he's such a good skater that honestly, he gets back there faster than anybody anyway. So a very unique and gifted player. In fact, I just ran into his dad, actually, here. They're from St. Albert, Alberta. We were talking about Troy Murray and Mark Messier and, you know, that. And they're probably thinking to themselves, boy, if the Blues can win this one and play Edmonton, that would be unbelievable for Colton and the family. So I think a lot of people out there have already got Nate McKinnon, and Colorado facing up against Connor McDavid and Edmonton Oilers, but I think the Blues have something else in mind, to be honest with you. I think they want to ruin this party, and they want to make sure they get back on a plane and go to Colorado.
I agree. The pride of St. Albert, Jerome Iginla as well, and I'm way down on that list. They haven't even named an outdoor rink after me there. But
are you St. Albert as well?
I'm a St. Albert boy. I love Colton. But Nick Holden as well in Ottawa, a fantastic human. Like, there's some good NHLers there. Jeff Sanderson and his son Jake, now high draft pick to Ottawa. Yeah. They're, you know, but I wanted to talk about Panger, Billy Husso. Because when you look at the crop of unrestricted free agent goaltenders, obviously Darcy Kemper's in there, Jack Campbell, but, you know, what do you think Billy Husso's ceiling is? And is he a guy that, obviously with Jordan Binnington's contract status, that St. Louis might just have to walk away from based on, you know, them being into Binnington and how well he did play in the playoffs?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting situation. I mean, honestly, if you're Billy Husso, he's waited his time. He's a UFA. Why wouldn't he wait? You know, why wouldn't he see what's out there? And if he doesn't like what's out there, then you know, I'm sure that, I mean, Doug Armstrong, I'm sure, has tried, you know, several different times to see what kind of deal he can get him under. You need two goaltenders in the NHL. We all know that. Binnington's a terrific goaltender, right? And, you know, he can find his game in a hurry like he did in the playoffs here. And then you watch him and you go, okay, that's the guy. We might have forgotten how good he was, you know, because he's been a little bit more up and down. But, you know, how good is Husso? I think technically he's incredibly sound. Doesn't beat himself too often, you know, if that makes any sense. Doesn't overcommit and overslide. Really good on wraparounds and jam plays. And what I find in the playoffs is those are important plays. I mean, players barreling down and going to the driving hard to the net. Now, in saying all that, I will say that there's some areas that need improvement on, and tonight's game would be a good one. Facing the rush, Noodles, you know how hard that is. You know, you've got high-octane team going through the neutral zone, and all of a sudden they get some speed. He's got beat by, I think Kadri's beat him twice on the rush. We've seen, I mean, that brilliant move by Nathan McKinnon. but it's still a rush play. You know, so those are plays where he starts out on top of his crease, and then as the play comes forward to him, generally when it's got speed, he backs in. So he thinks he's at the top of the crease, but by the time the shot's being taken, and you know exactly what I'm talking about here, he ends up backing in, and he's on the goal line. So those are just learning curves for me, for Billy Huso. But everything else is in real good order. He's a good person. He works hard. He's got a great attitude. He's a typical Finn. And I really like the guy. So I think he's got some great upside. I think he could be he proved this year that he's a number one goaltender. He could prove to any team that knocked on the door that he would be a solid number one goaltender.
Darren Pang joining us here on Overdrive. You know, David Perron, when he scored, you know, a couple goals, and he's scoring in bunches, right? It's like he's not scoring one goal a game. It's like a couple goals this game, three, you know, a hat trick another game. But I have to be honest with you, Panger, when I just saw that he would shine in certain games, I'm like, he's still playing? I mean, I know we typically talk about guys who are, you know, 35 and over, mostly because of the contracts. But, I mean, at 33 years of age, he also seems to have gotten better in the last few years, kind of like a fine wine with the St. Louis Blues. What have you just seen from him, and what is he providing in these playoffs?
Yeah, he's a Chateau Lafite Rothschild, 1981, I think. beautiful bottle of wine that's just going to get more expensive in time and better with age. You are correct. It's the best hockey that I've seen him play in the last 3 years. He and Ryan O'Reilly, for the 9,000th time this morning on a, you know, getting ready for game six, they trot out there. They're the first two on the ice. They're rimming pucks around the boards. They're making small, short little passes to one another. They're heel-to-toe saucer passes in different areas of the ice. I mean, they're great together. And I think if you're Doug Armstrong, you're looking at these two and saying, I'm not sure what kind of term you want to give them, but you want to keep them both together. He changed his stick a couple of years ago, and I always tell him that Jonathan Marchessault deserves a lot of credit for your kind of your comeback play, because you lengthened the stick, you made it more whippier, you changed the curve, and I think that has changed his game entirely from where it was going before with a shorter stick that was way too stiff and the curve wasn't right for this game nowadays. And so that change to me was a big part of David Perron, you know, getting to this spot again. And I think he's got four really, really good years ahead of him, if I want to put a number on it.
I remember one time I was doing some stick samples with the CCM rep here in Toronto, and he brought a whole bunch of different ones, right? He brought Burns, and Perron was one of the ones, and I looked down at the thing. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, I turned to the rep. I said, he actually uses this thing in a real NHL game? He goes, oh, yeah. Like, it's a weird-looking thing. And another guy is Ryan O'Reilly. I don't know if you've ever seen his stick. It's almost like a straight blade with, like, this little toe hook at the end. But he makes it work. Like, anytime O'Reilly's in and around the net, it's on his stick, it's off his stick, and he's very dangerous in those areas. And he's shown that throughout the playoffs as well.
How long ago was it that you saw that stick from Perron? It had to be 3 or 4 years
ago.
That
would have been like, honestly, 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah, he changed. That's the one that he changed from. He does not use that one anymore because it was just too firm, and he tried to pull the puck back and change the angle, and it got blocked and deflected, and he was getting frustrated. He had no clean looks. And so that one was a short one that was 110 flex with that long blade because he loved Kovalev. And this one's just a classic you know, it's a classic curve right in the middle of the belly of the stick, and it's about a 71 flex. So he gets that off quickly. And Ryan O'Reilly, yeah, you're right about that. How many times do you see Ryan O'Reilly with one hand on his stick? It's a very upright stick, but one hand on his stick, and he's able to turn the stick over of the opposition. He's able to pull it off the boards with just one hand. He's able to defend the player and have one hand on his stick. And he and David Perron do that better than anybody in the league to protect the puck.
Panger, I know we're talking about Colorado and St. Louis, but did you lay eyes on the Edmonton and Calgary game last night and the goal or non-goal by Blake Coleman?
Yeah, I did, and I had a long conversation with all our guys today. We all hot-stoved it up, and I think all of us looked at it like the first three or four replays. It was like, it's a goal. I mean, and then they show one replay, and you're like, put a little doubt in your mind, you know?
Yeah.
But I think at the end, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I think that puck was going in. I looked at it again after that, after I changed my mind for the sixth time, and came back to it and said, I think that's a goal.
Yeah. I think that's the consensus. I really do. And I get it. I understand where the league was coming from. And I think you're right. There's one angle where it's like, that looks kind of like a a kicking motion. But, all the other, like even watching it live, Panger, my instinct, and I know the former goaltender in you, is always that no goal, no goal. You want to protect the goaltenders. But I was like, I think that's a goal. Like, for me, it was going in already. He was battling for position with CeCe. His right leg catches Mike Smith's pad. Like, yeah, did he intend to guide it over the line? I think he wanted to help it, absolutely. But I think the league is, there's so many goals you see where a player can redirect the puck into the net. And it just didn't, for me, it wasn't a distinct kicking motion. I just think there was one where there was maybe an extension that may have gotten everybody thinking.
Yes, I agree with you. And that's, there's too many angles.
Yeah,
by the time
exactly.
You got to the last one, it puts doubt in your mind. And I know they've all got a hard job and they're trying to do the best they can, and it gets frustrating. But, I think there may be a better way. I'm glad we haven't had that much controversy. I remember sitting at that TSN panel during the course of playoffs, and me and Bob McKenzie and James Duffy, we'd have the 1-2-3 going on there. Okay, how many is that now? Puck over the glass and a kicked in puck into the net or goalie interference. But but that was a significant one because it's a huge moment in the hockey game.
Mm-hmm. All right, Panger, well, we appreciate you taking the time. We look forward to the game tonight, and maybe we'll find out who's facing Edmonton tonight. Maybe we won't. We just hope it's a good one.
Always a pleasure. And who really did knock O-Dog's teeth out? Which one of you?
I don't know. We need the real story.
Yeah.
Apparently he bit into a sub sandwich and his teeth had just had enough. So
it's like Little Shop of Horrors where the plant attacks you. Apparently the sandwich attacked him.
Wow. He should maybe go to a place that's got softer bread.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I don't know what 5-day-old bread he was chomping down on, but it took his teeth. It took his teeth, Panger.
That's wicked.
Yeah.
He should have told you it was a chicken wing. Would have sounded better.
Exactly. Tell a good story, anyway. But he tells the truth.
Night. You got it.
All
have
right,
a great
Darren.
Night, everybody.
Banker.
See you guys.
Darren Pang, former NHL goalie, NHL and TNT analyst. Like, yeah, the truth never is really
but
all that pretty.
Andy, did you ever get that hard bread as a kid, like right from the bakery? But it's like you can break a tooth on that. It's
yes.
Like a circle donut-looking bread thing.
Wasn't that like ciabatta? Isn't that like a ciabatta? Or
I don't know, but my dad loves it. Like, the harder the bread,
yeah.
My dad takes it like a challenge. Like, the harder this bread is, the more he likes it.
Well, you know what I don't understand? And I mean, I get in some ways I understand, but they like the harder bread because it's stable when they dunk it in the sauce. But I'm like, but now you're getting hard bread just to purposely soften
or there's like,
it.
Or they make you make a sandwich with it, but use like a gallon of olive oil. It's like seeping through the bag.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's not.
We're new age Italian, Andy.
Yeah,
you and I.
Problems growing up in an Italian household.
Yeah.
But I will say, I always had the best lunches. But I used to freak out everyone in my class too because I would have my nice panino, and sometimes like my mom would just put bocconcini in there.
Yeah.
And I went to school with kids who had no clue what bocconcini was. So my girlfriend and I, who were both Italian, we would just tell them they were dead mice.
No.
No. You said. You're talking, who has no idea? I have no idea what the hell you just said. What is that?
It's like it's that white.
Bocconcini, the round white cheese.
It tastes like
the
nothing.
Round one.
Yeah,
well,
it doesn't taste like much, really.
Bocconcini.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, bocconcini.
Okay, well, what did you say? You said, like, something bocconcini.
She maple-ized it for you.
Yes,
Woodbridge-ized
exactly.
It,
that's
you know?
Right. Yes, so, I like the little round cheese. Round,
yeah, so Frank, we were working the NHL Network one night, and it was Noodles and I, and we were talking about Zach Fucale. So I said to Noodles, I turned to Noodles and I asked him a question. I don't even know what it was, but it was blah, 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 something, something, Zach Fucale, Zach Fucale. And he looks at me, he goes, I don't know who that is, but I can tell you about Zach Fucale.
Exactly. I'm not going to be, I'm not very good at doing the Italian accent.
Yeah.
Do it on purpose. It just happens. If I see an Italian name, I cannot. Like, when Mangiapane was on,
I can't be like,
hi, Mangiapane.
Yeah. No,
like,
no.
I'm not doing it.
Mangiapane.
But you got very excited when he was on. We're here with Andrew Mangiapane. Like, you're doubled down on him. Like, even he was like, all right, knock it off here. Let's go. Good to be on the show. But
he enjoyed. Yeah. Okay, you brought up something that's a wee bit of a bone of contention. Abruzzese.
Right?
Abruzzese.
I don't know.
But people, what are people calling him? Abruzzese?
I thought we were done with this when the Leafs lost.
And here's the other thing. I'm hoping he gets a little seasoning in the minors next year so we don't have to talk about it. Like, I'm like, let's put him in the Marlies until Christmas and let's see
until
what happens.
Until we can really come up with an answer.
Exactly. And then maybe in the Marlies he gets a nickname from Rich Kloon, like, you know, ugly face or stinky or something. And we're like, yeah, there it is. Like, you know.
Rich Kloon's the best, by the way. He's coming to my wedding. He's
oh,
just
awesome.
He's
I've
just
heard
the
great
best.
Things about I don't know him, but I've heard amazing things about it. But my point is as an analyst having to speak people's names, like, I struggle with stuff like that because I'll ask Gord 10 times. I'm like, can you please lay it out for me here? Because, you know, in the heat of moment, you don't want to butcher somebody's name. You're not trying to be disrespectful. So, you know, a guy like that, if he scores a big goal and I, like, chew his name down, it's terrible.
Yeah.
And it's, you know.
Because it's
you,
just, like, what if it's his first goal? It's a special moment for the kid, the family, right?
Exactly.
Like, you want everyone to watch these clips, the kids, the grandkids over the years, right?
Yeah.
But see, the thing is you don't have to put, like, the roll, the R, the accent. Like, to say Abruzzese, I feel like that's pretty easy. Like, Abruzzese is truly wrong. And it's so funny because I only fill in once in a while here. I mean, I don't do radio with 1050 every day like I used to. The amount of messages I got when he was, like, called up to the Leafs and people were saying, they're like, Andy, please help them.
Yeah.
But I'm like, y'all, you have to see
I got a little bit. I can't remember if it was Gord or Craig Button sent me a little bit of a stern tweet. And I was like, ooh. Thought we were on a little more friendlier
we were
terms chummy, than that.
Chumps or what was it about?
It was about Abruzzese, about his name being pronounced. I think it was Craig, who's, you know, Craig. He's the best, right? But I think it was, no, the kid wants it pronounced this way. That's how you have to pronounce it. I said,
we got to tell
know,
the kids, wow, not right.
The problem is, too, and I will say this, when you're in the rooms and you're doing color that morning, you can talk to guys and be like, hey, you know what? Just for clarification, you actually ask the person, what do you want to, you know, pronounce your last name for me? And, you know, they'll tell you. But, like, the brothers, what was it, Milan Mihalik?
Oh, my God. Yes.
And his brother, they both told different last names.
That's
to
hilarious.
Dean Brown. Dean Brown nearly lost his mind because one said Mihalik, one said Mihalich or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, okay. And you're like, okay, you guys are brothers and you can't even sort it out.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the thing I always joke and I'll say tomato, tomato.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. I'm talking about you on TV. But, I'd never want to be disrespectful. Like you say, Frankie, you know, Abruzzese or whatever his name is, he scores his first goal and Gord lays it out. And I'm like, what a shot here from Abruzzese, and, like, you know, you don't want to do that, right? So
I know.
I'll have to learn it. I'll have to respect it. Like, and you hope that he has a long career with the Leafs. I think they're going to need him because
they need some young players, right? You got to restock the cupboard. You need guys pushing for jobs.
Yeah.
Maybe when we come back from break, I'll share with you. Panger mentioned some fine wine. I'll share with you some advice I got very early in my career, and it has to do with fine wine and Lethbridge, Alberta.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's hear that. Let's get into Dear Andy P. The Grappler is going to hop on.
Love it.
So I will try to give some advice. That's next on Overdrive.
So then you asked yourselves, isn't there something more to life?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, well, let me clue you in on something. There isn't.
She said looks aren't that important to her?
Dear Hazy B.
My God, I got a couple of words for you. You better get your act together. You can't always get
what you want. So I feel like I should share some of the first piece of advice I ever got in the NHL, Andy and Noodles. And
let's start it off with that advice, dear Frankie.
Yeah, so I was called up at just freshly turned 20, right out of junior, called up for the end of the season. I was supposed to be a black ace, and there was some injuries, so I actually got in the lineup. And so the first road trip was to Edmonton. It was the last road trip of the season, but it was my first road trip. So Keith Ballard and Dan Hamhuis, two of the best guys you can imagine, take me out for dinner. And we're, you know, getting acclimated or whatever. And the first bit of advice, they said, Frankie, do not be the 20-year-old from Lethbridge, Alberta, that thinks they know the wine list. Let the veterans pick the wine. And that was the first advice I got in my NHL career.
Basically, don't be the first to reach out for the wine list. Sit Yeah. Down.
I don't know why they chose Lethbridge, though, Noodles.
I was just going to say. Yeah. I mean, I played junior there. I was going to say, was it a fine boxed wine that you were going to reach for?
I think that's part of the shtick, right? Like, you don't know wine. You're from Lethbridge. I don't know. I don't even know where Lethbridge is.
I also think at that age, I mean, how well do you really know wine that you'll be able to make a good decision?
I knew nothing about anything.
Throughout my 20s, I mean, every time my girlfriends and I go to Cottage or wherever we go, I would always bring Black Tower. Does that wine even still exist? It would come in a bottle. Like,
I've never seen that.
Black Tower.
Yeah.
Oh, it was disgusting, and it was cheap, so that's why I got it.
I was going to say, it's $8.99. I grew up on Alberta vodka and a whiskey called Silk Tassel. And I had long hair back then, and when you finish the bottle, you put your hair up with the tassel. That's basically what we do back then.
So instead of the worm, you grab a tassel.
You all bring a 26 of Silk Tassel, and you finish it off, and then you go to the bar.
How many tassels do you have?
I wonder if, does that burn more on the way in or on the way out, Noodles?
I don't know. Like, I feel like that whiskey was like $7 a bottle, and you're right. Like, it was a bar fight in a bottle. That's what it called. That's what it was, legitimately.
Andy Noodles, Frankie with you. The grappler hopping on now.
Love
because
it.
Now I get it. People are probably disappointed. They're regular, you know, psychologists, and Hazy B is not here.
No, Andy, everyone's excited. They finally get a different perspective after a few months of Hayes giving, you know, advice that for some reason we're qualified to give.
We're not. I am. So let's go. Let's see what this is all about.
Let's start. This one's from Matt Simpson. Dear Andy P, wife keeps me at me to set her up her newly single friend with a buddy of mine. I'm pretty sure he won't be interested, but she is keeping on me to set them up. I really just want to stay out of it because if it doesn't go well, I'll lose my golfing buddy. Yeah. How do I get her off my back?
Yeah, that's a hard one. Because I think all of us have kind of been in that situation where in your gut, you're just like, I don't think this is going to work out, but I don't know how to politely say it because I don't want to, I'm not trying to offend your friend by saying they're not, you know, good looking enough or smart enough or funny enough. Like, it has nothing to do with that. It's just, you know, people and you know, maybe it wouldn't click. So here's what I would say. Never, ever make it feel like a setup. So if your wife really thinks that they would hit it off, then they'll find each other in a crowded room if you host a party. Right? Like, just invite other friends, invite other people, get people over, and then just be like, you know, casually introduce. Be like, hey, Joe, this is Jane, whatever, and then see if something happens. And if it doesn't, it's over. Your wife can't say anything anymore. It's done. But
you know,
never
what it is
make
about
it awkward.
That too, right? Like, you lose a golfing buddy, that's tough. If you fall out of rotation with a golf crew, it's very difficult because they fill it. They fill the foursome. And
well, didn't that happen to you?
That happened to me.
I had
3 summers where I didn't really golf because I had all these crazy injuries. And I text my guys after, like, oh, yeah, like, foursome's been filled for 3 years. We'll let you know if there's an opening.
See,
it's like a wait list.
I'm the other way. Like, is it the wife trying to set up
her friend?
Yeah,
she's putting the pressure on,
Just tell a bad story about your buddy. Be like, you don't want her to date that guy. Like, he did this at a bar one night, or he did that. Like,
But then the wife's not going to want you to hang out with him.
No,
be careful.
Not egregious. You just tell a story that is not a fit. You'd be like, no, you don't want to set her up with that guy.
I don't think it needs to be that egregious of a story either. Just something that makes him look like an absolute buffoon that nobody would ever want to be with.
This is a Seinfeld episode, is it not? Isn't that Costanza? Doesn't he do like, you don't want to be with that guy. He's a bad egg.
exactly.
Just start a rumor. Poor guy's a nose picker. Public nose picker.
Yeah. You know, I feel like, and you don't want to be in the middle of it when it doesn't go well, because you know one of them's going to screw up.
Yeah.
Like, it's rare that they find each other and fall in love. Chances are, like, one of them will get drunk and do something stupid, and now everyone has to
deal with it. The tassel whiskey.
Drink a bottle of Silk
She
tassel.
Might fall in love with that still, or vice versa. I don't know. That's why I say, like, you can't make it awkward that it's a setup. Just have other people there, and if they hit it off, they're going to hit it off. And if they don't, then it's end of conversation. Be like, we put them in the same room together. And they didn't even pay attention to each other. Done.
Exactly.
Okay. Dear Andy P, off and running. Love it. Moving on. Dear Andy P., over the last 2 years, I got really into Formula One. In January, I booked a hotel in Montreal for the Grand Prix. However, my wife is now 35 weeks pregnant with our third child, and the race is in 2 weeks. Should I stay or should I go?
Shoot. How long is a woman pregnant for again? What is
39,
it?
39, isn't it?
Is it 39?
Well, they technically 40. Isn't it supposed to be like
okay. So basically, he's going right when she's about to give birth.
Correct.
Right, like it's yeah.
So
that's tight.
Yeah, as a Formula One fan myself, can you have a wee bit of a conversation where it's the third kid, and maybe like, is it okay if you miss the
first two?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been there for number one.
Yeah,
I was there for number two. I'll be right back, honey. Because I mean, Formula, it's just a weekend thing. It's not like you're gone for a week.
Well,
I mean,
and
I don't
how
know.
Far is Montreal?
It's a 5-hour drive.
Yeah,
five
but it's an
drive.
Hour flight. I mean,
there, hour you flight. Know,
there's things that I feel like if something happens, then you can go. All right, I'll be there in an hour and a half. Like I'll be there in 2 hours. Like you know, if something like that, it's rolling the dice. But I like where you're headed, Andy. I like where you're headed. Where you're finding somewhere in the middle, being like. I think, what did you say, 35 weeks, and it's in 2 weeks?
Yeah.
So
that's
at 37 weeks, so that's that final week. You got to figure out where the other children came, if they came early or they came late.
That's the trick.
Looking for patterns.
Isn't it like if the more children you have, don't they, I mean, I don't know, listen, you're talking to someone, I don't have kids, but
honestly,
women I know who do have more than one, don't they just come faster?
Honestly.
You're
like,
talking to the wrong
my
panel.
My experience. I'll tell you my experience, and this isn't.
You're the dad here.
Tell silence here. Steph, the second baby, was like, I'm having stomach pains. And I'm like, well, I bought a movie ticket at 12:50. And I'm like, let's go. We'll go down. And we went down to the doctor. And sometimes you just think, okay, it's something, the baby moving, not moving, and all that. And then they were like, you're in labor. Like, she was in labor when it was going on. And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to miss the movie, it sounds like. And
that's
we called Steph's parents. And they came down. But it was, honestly, God, like, these things happen pretty quick.
Yeah.
Like, it's – and it is a shock. So he better be somewhat around. I'm joking about being far away because you want to be there for him because they do happen pretty quick.
You know what, too? That's a hectic weekend there, right? I feel like it's not going to be easy getting in and out of the city.
Nope.
Like, that's you know,
he'll be in one, maybe have some drinks.
Yeah. And I also think it's risky, too, just looking ahead to the future because, you know, if something does go wrong and she gives birth early, the rest of their time together, anytime he wants to get out of doing anything, it's, remember the time you went to the Montreal Grand Prix when we had our third child?
Yeah.
Are you saying women hold things against their husbands for years to come?
Yeah.
This is very true.
I don't think you can deny that, Andy.
No, no.
It's known to happen.
So I guess that's the question he has to ask himself. Is this worth it as well to the point where in the future, if there's something else he wants to do, she might turn around and be like, nah, man, you
could
used
be,
up
like,
your
listen,
nine
if,
lives.
If you want to see Lewis Hamilton and what could be his final time racing in Montreal, then, might be worth it.
Yeah.
That's true.
Third kid, I'm not going to have the conversation.
Okay. Yeah. Moving on. Dear Andy P., I tested positive for COVID 2 months ago and have kept the positive test just in case I wanted a nice little 10-day break from work. The weather where I'm at is beautiful the next week or so. Do I activate the positive test now or wait for a more opportune moment?
Savage move.
And I will admit, though. I kind of respect it.
I love that.
I've thought of this because I went through a phase, right, where, I mean, this year, and I've said this before, like it just ruined me from a work perspective. Like 2 Olympics, 6 months apart, World Cup qualifiers. I'm like, oh, my God. And I had a moment, I will admit, where I'm like, do I lie and say that I tested positive just because right away you go 5-day isolation? Just so I can get 5 days off. But I don't know. It's, to me, it's bad juju. It's bad karma.
Yeah.
You don't want to wish it back. You don't want to.
I
don't
like
it. I don't like it. I don't like it.
The fake COVID test can come back to bite you in the ass at some point. Like, you know, I'm not a big spiritual person and I'm not religious, any of that stuff. But I feel like karma is real.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Like, you lie about it, and then you do get it, and it's
because you put it out there in the universe.
Let me ask you this. What if the employer, like, he's talking about work. What if the employer's a bad employer? What if they have it coming, and this is like, I'm going to stick it to you now with this COVID test and see you later for 10 days. You deserve
it. That's I feel like we could have used a little more information with this
some
one.
Context.
Right? He's working for Dr. Evil.
Exactly.
Well, if that's the case, Dr. Evil will be like, well, I don't care that you're home sick. You're still going to work from home.
Yeah. They'll find a way to make you do some work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't like it. I mean, listen, I'm not going to lie. It crossed my mind when I'm just like, oh, I just want a break. But then I thought, nah, I do not want to welcome that into my life. No.
Seems a little bit risky. Okay, I think we got time for one more. Okay. Dear Andy P., a new woman joined the Beer League soccer team this year. We have really good chemistry. Do I risk the team chem and pursue something with her, or do I put the team ahead of myself?
Put the team first. Yeah. You wait to the end. Don't worry because you don't want to ruin it. This happened to me years ago when I used to play again. I played co-ed soccer for years as well, beer league. And then it just gets weird, especially if you get the no. If you get the Heisman and then you're like,
that's awkward.
And you got to play together.
But what if she is interested and is waiting for him to make a move, but then he doesn't, so she moves on to something else?
No, you still have to wait. Yeah.
No, I'm going with this because you might as well strike while that you believe the iron is hot, because if you don't, what if one of the other guys on the team asks her and she's like, yeah, you know what? Like, this guy is.
Then she didn't like you.
Well, you're not going to hold out just for. Yeah. For man,
maybe
X
she didn't get to know him well.
Like,
so do a little flirting, make it known. But here's the thing: what if he then, like, I don't like it, because now if you go and screw up in the game, I still want to be able to yell at you. I don't want to feel bad.
Good teammate, thanks.
I think you need to be able to
compartmentalize, you know, the flirting and then the
being a terrible teammate. Pass over here. What's wrong with you?
Exactly.
I'm not over there. I'm over here. And then you ruin date night. See, you can't do that.
I just think you should. You know what? If you feel like it's there, go. Go at it, and then if it doesn't work out, then you can deal with the carnage.
Look at
after.
You, lovebirds.
You
I'm all
your
like,
shot.
Wait, put
you
the team first.
Shot.
Yeah, exactly. Go for it. Go for it. That's what I would say.
All right.
You,
short and sweet.
That's
nice little Friday edition of Dear Andy P.
I think
that
we helped some people.
I think we
just confused a lot of people.
I feel like we all kind of contradicted ourselves with our own answers. But,
but I feel like we presented everything, and now they know the facts, and they can make an informed decision.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do here. Yeah.
That's all we do is bring you different viewpoints. Grappler, you're going to stick around because we have some FanDuel best bets coming up heading into the weekend. One last segment to go here before it's play that Debbie Deb again when we come back, because Lookout Weekend, here we come. Stay with us. Feel it in your soul.
I don't like how it feels in my soul. I didn't approve this, JP.
So good. It's so good. Everyone's ready for the weekend now. Let's go. Let's go. And let's see if people can win some money based on your advice. Grappler.
Yeah, we're gonna have to see. It didn't go so well yesterday. I went 1-for-3, which, I mean, listen, a 1-for-1-for is better than an 0-for. So let's see if we can improve a little bit tonight.
Okay.
Tonight. Today's best bets is brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Okay. Blues Avalanche game 6 tonight. Nathan MacKinnon, anytime goal scorer. I gotta think coming off the Hattie, he's scoring at least one tonight. You can get that at +128. That's the first one. Jays Angels game 2. O's boy Alec Manoah on the mound.
Yes.
Over under for K's is 6.5. Manoah's only got 11 strikeouts in his last three games, but the Angels are also a team that strikes out, I think, third most in Major League Baseball. So I think he can get to at least 7 Ks tonight. So that's number 2. And then Heat Celtics game 6 tonight. The Miami Heat desperately need a win. They've looked awful the past couple games. I think Bam Adebayo is going to get a double-double. You can bet on that at +125. Today's Best Bets was brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more and get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today.
That's not easy to say. Download FanDuel.
I jumbled the exact same part on the read yesterday. I'm going to have to work on that for next time Hazy's off.
There's just things that get you. That's what gets you. It's fine. We all have it. We all have something that gets us. I have to say Detroit Red Wings slowly, because I will say Detroit Red Wings if I go too fast. It's inevitable.
You're supposed to say Detroit or the Red Wings. You're not supposed to put them together. I learned that early on.
Really?
That's what I was told. It's one of the toughest team names to say when you're just trying to.
That sounds like Gordon Miller broadcasting advice.
And I can't say Russell Westbrook too quickly either, or I will say Russell Westbrook. See?
Imagine if you didn't have your 3 front teeth.
They get. O-Dog has his teeth back now. He'll be back
on Monday.
So will you, Noodles. Thanks for having me as your guest host the last 2 days. Appreciate Frankie. Thanks for being our e-bug for the day. You are emergency backup goalie call-up.
I had a blast.
Have a great weekend, everybody. You've been listening and watching Overdrive. You'll be back on Monday at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.